The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Welcome to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to create a life that's intentional and dynamic? Welcome to The Intentional Spirit with your host, Reverend Temple Hayes.
And welcome, everyone, and thank you so much for being here, all of you intentional spirits. What a pleasure it is to be with you and to feature incredible people from all over the universe of this dimension and sometimes, quite frankly, probably from another one. Who knows? I mean, what better time than now if you're going to label yourself to call yourself a mystic? Because at this point, anything is possible. So really appreciate you and all the things that you do. That being said, it's my pleasure today to bring to you Jacob L. Cooper. And we want to talk about his book and his near-death experience that he had as a child, and we're talking about his new book, Life After Breath. Wow, how a brush with fatality gave me a glimpse of immortality. Welcome, Jacob, to the show. So glad you're here.
Such an honor. Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction and for having me on as a guest.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. You've been scheduled for a long time, so I've really been looking forward to this, and I love that, you know, so much of the energy is emerging forward to change and to open that veil between life and death, because that's all it is. It's just a shadow away, you know. I liken to that idea of Psalms 23, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. It's just a shadow. It's real, but it's a shadow. And so tell us, get us going in your story. And when you said that this happened to you as a child, what happened in your life?
Yeah, you know, I was 3 years old at the time, which, you know, we could explain hopefully later on how I do believe and know, you know, it was possible for me to retain it, you know, in such clarity. But I was 3 years old. It was September of 1993, I'm giving my age away, and I had something called pertussis, otherwise known as whooping cough, which for infants or children, you know, could be fatal, you know, if it's not properly treated, you know, medically or given the proper modality. And so I, at the time, you know, suffocated, you know, due to whooping cough. I went to a park with family friends, and I climbed up a literal ladder to a slide. You know, you think of the name Jacob and ladder. And, you know,
yeah.
due to the suffocation and deprivation of oxygen, every part of my body began to shut down. But I found that my spirit and my doorway to eternity was just opening up. And like we said, it was a shadow, but it was an eternal awakening, the infinite reality that we can never be taken from. And so it was profound. And so from suffocating, I was able to touch to really get in touch with the eternal breath bestowed in all of us since the dawning of time.
And I mean, I think the thing about these kind of experiences that happen, and of course with Raymond Moody, William Peters, who has an organization called Shared Crossing. I mean, with trailblazers before, this is not an odd conversation now. I mean, thank heavens, you know, that people are coming forward and sharing. But when you're 3 years old and you have this occur, did you talk about it right away? Did you talk about it to people that actually understood what you were talking about, or, you know, what did that look like?
No, you know, It's funny you mentioned Trailblazers because Raymond, you know, is on my cover, and without Raymond, I don't know if I would be having this conversation right now. You know, and the reason is they were able to give a vocabulary and a lexicon and a diagnosis of what I had. It wasn't until I would say my later teens, early 20s, where I was able to put into words and have a vernacular of my experience. And I picked up a book that I was gifted called Embraced by the Light by Betty Eady, which was a bestseller, I think in the 90s, about her near-death experience. And reading her book all of a sudden gave me universality and a language behind this experience that other people had it. You know, for me, I very much buried it very much deep within. I didn't tell anyone. It was just something, you know, that I had in a cool experience, but it wasn't something that I could put into words, or I didn't know that words could describe it or other people would understand it or that there was such a label for it. It just, to me, was the most magnificent, euphoric, powerful, transformative experience that I could recall in this lifetime. So it took me a bit of time. And I know groundbreaking, you know, near-death experience researchers such as PMH Atwater, for instance, who you know, really specializes in children and infancy near-death experiences, will attest that it takes several decades to integrate and make sense of the NDE. And so I could say that that was pretty much spot on with what I experienced.
And when you did, you know, have your breakthrough, in other words, you came forth, what about, because I, you know, one of the things with this show is that, you know, Jeff and I have been doing this show for a long time, and Andrea, and so we are, you know, we're kind of familiar with the people that are tuning in, and we attract, you know, these intentional spirits because they want to be, they either are and continue to be, or they want to be more intentional. So I think stories about particular moments and things that happen and people that accept or abandon or, you know, engage, I think they're very healthy. And so when you first then started talking about it and you were in your 20s, were you received right away? Did your family go, God, he's so cool. You know, what a great dude. So glad to be affiliated with him. Did you have that kind of space in your life?
Well, I didn't discuss it with my parents right away. They were one of the actual last people that I discussed it with. You know, there was a group that I did speak to, and I was at the time, you know, practicing yoga, meditation, and, you know, as an infant, I would do all these things, but I wouldn't have a formal practice for it. I wouldn't have a label for it. It would just be my natural connection. And as an adult, you know, we have labels for all this stuff and people who practice it and all that stuff. And so I just gravitated to people who were, you know, very much intuitives, people who were astrologers. And so speaking with a couple of intuitive friends of mine, they said, you got to get out there, dude. You got a story. You got to share it. And, you know, there was a moment where, you know, I was attending a yoga seminar, and at the time it was just very difficult. I, you know, was in my house, and I was, I guess, acting out, and I was thrown out of my house for a couple of days, and I just felt so displaced. I was in like my early college years, and I just felt, you know, at ground zero almost. And a woman approached me and said, you know, you have a very powerful auric field. And I'm just like, what? You know, I kind of heard the term, but when someone random comes up to you, who really was not so random, you know, and she says, you're going to be a healer. I see you speaking in front of a lot of people one day, and you're going to make an impact on this world. And, you know, so much of that just reminded me of elements that I speak about in Life After Breath and my NDE, where, you know, part of it was being able to stay on for this mission of being this healer. But my first real, you know, group was with was with a metaphysical organization that was on the same town that I actually had my near-death experience. But, you know, one time I had I was a therapist and working with, you know, a couple other different therapists as an intern. And somehow, in some way, this topic of conversation got brought up. And I spoke to my supervisor that I had this. And he said, in group supervision, I really want you to talk about this. And I go, geez, you know, talk about this with anyone is difficult, never mind therapist. I feel like I'm going to be judged or, you know, put in a psychiatric ward. You know, are they going to believe me? And after discussing that, you know, I just found that there was just such an interest and such an openness. And so to me, it was very cathartic and very healing to be able to bring forward this book for other people to read and then have this book a part of their lives too. And, you know, that's why I wrote my book. So, you know.
Wow. How rewarding is that, right? And it's likened to, I'm hearing an underneath layer that, would you call yourself an old soul?
I get that all the time. That one of my endorsements, Pat Longo, she is a very well-known healer, and being a medium in Long Island, she was behind them, like Long Island Medium and all these other people. She's a very powerful healer, and it's in her endorsement. She goes, it is evident that Jacob is an old soul.
I see that. You know, I'm looking at your website, and everyone else, you can tune in to Jacob's website. It's jacoblcooper.com, and you can read all about him and make that connection. Yeah, it's fun being in your circle because we have some mutual relationships. Suzanne Giesman is a friend of mine, and I see her on there. Always love Raymond. He's been here a time or two in our community. And you're in a great circle of amazing beings. So she made a reference to you being an old soul. But when you were talking about the things you were doing on it early in your life and things you just knew, well, that's old soul reality, because you don't usually get that in kindergarten. Not yet, anyway.
Right.
Not in most kindergartens, you know. Maybe the Bali school will influence enough people nationwide, but at this point, probably not, right?
Right. You know, and an old soul is, in later in life, seen as a blessing in many ways. But certainly when you're a child, and for myself, that made life quite complicated. Then you add the near-death experience, and just in terms of how that impacted me, where all of a sudden, you know, this reality that was being put on a conveyor belt, I was just taking off the apparatus. And now all of a sudden, I look at things through a totally different lens, but the lens was that what we today label as spiritual could be seen by other people as monopolized. You know, this person who meditates daily or burns Nag Champa or has crystals is spiritual. We sometimes get lost in the practice and the surface level of it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think what I just learned was we are all spiritual. We all are spirits here on earth. We all aren't just here to bring heaven on earth. We are literal droplets of heaven here on earth. And so, you know, and the clear understanding that this wasn't a random biological, biochemical existence, but this was an infinite intelligence far greater than my own behind so many different parts of life. And sometimes we lose sight of that intelligence guiding the path, and sometimes, you know, fear overtakes the faith within the plan, you know.
Absolutely. Well, I applaud you for living out loud. You know, that's what's so cool, that you're willing to be a messenger and share your story and reach another audience, in addition to, you know, the bravery of Raymond and Suzanne and Anita Morjani. I mean, that it takes a lot of courage to step out when, you know, so many people are more comfortable living in a box and just taking things at face value. I find it, very exciting. I haven't had a near-death experience, but I had a number of years in my life that I was like somewhere between life and death, energetically speaking. And so I am an extreme advocate for near-death experiences. They're amazing and life-changing and life-altering and help people be free of a lot of paradigms that they live in. But I'm an advocate for my own experience of the energy part of how to move from near death to we have too many near life experiences. The things we could have said yes to that we were afraid of, or those kind of things, letting people in because we had been rejected before, and those kind of things. But I applaud you for what you're about and what you're doing. How long has the book been out?
Yes, it came out a week before Christmas, December of 2020. So just a couple of months. But Life After Breath has had a whole life within itself. You get emails from, people in hospital beds, people in Ireland, people in Australia. And so I know the Old Testament will always say to spread yourself to all four corners of the earth. And that's probably the only thing that I've kept until this day from school. But it's very important.
That's enough. That's enough right there, right? That's like prayer job is expand my territory. So that's it. It sounds like your territory has been broadened, right?
Well, I give technology great credit. I mean, just last week I did an interview in Ireland, and then the morning before, one in Sweden. And without this stuff, you can't reach and teach people, this regard. It's just amazing. And like anything in life, it's what we make of it. It really has a lot of potential. But regarding the phenomenon of near-death experiences and part of, anything action that I do, I try to have high intention where I sit with what do people need to hear? What would be helpful? What would be resourceful for readers? And, being in the field of near-death experiences and being a fan of, all this stuff, I sometimes find myself, putting other people on pedestals where sometimes we transfer this world of success, to those who are in the spotlight. And what I learned really is the spirit realm is a total diametric opposite in so many regards of this realm, where the hierarchy and the better and the monopolization is just an illusion of this paradigm. And so in Life After Breath, my real goal is for people to not put myself, a near-death experiencer, or the near-death experience phenomenon itself on a pedestal, but rather to have that as a doorway to their own inner truth of eternity, and to have like a little bit of amnesia that they are just more than this body, they are more than their pain, their struggles, they're infinitely protected and guided, and this is something that we all bestow, and I think it's just the closest act I think to embodying this is recollection and having parts of your soul having a familiar tickle to it when you hear someone speak,
That is beautiful. And in your talking with people in Ireland and other places, is there a common thread? Are you able to see some common things that are emerging within people and what they're concerned about or what they're celebrating? It doesn't have to be that something's wrong. It could be something right. What is that looking like in this new door that you have opened from your book, Life After Breath?
Yeah, I think obviously in any time, but today especially, it's so easy, to be apathetic and to be governed by the everyday problems that we're, all walked into, in this world. But I think a lot of people are more geared towards solutions. At least if they are hurting, they're looking for deeper answers and they're utilizing and they're able to generate the hope past their own pain. And so they're not just sitting there within their pain, they're trying to migrate to deeper pearls of wisdom to get them through and navigate, you know, these waters. And so I think in a way, the near-death experience, and not to get into specifics, but on a macro basis, it almost feels like what we are going through is a bit of an NDE, in a sense that what we had was just pulled under our feet, and now we're trying to find this new gear, this new foundation. And so whatever we were standing on, we can't, because that's changed. You know, the world has changed. You can never step in the same river twice. The river's always changing. And that has happened this year times 10. And so when that was being pulled, I think people are tuning into another frequency. And that in itself is a nutshell of so many near-death experiences. We have the shake-up periods of consciousness, lose your breath. You know, you. Some people it's intentional, some it's unintentional, but it's usually jeopardization to the body that invigorates and opens up, you know, your soul in a way, you know, in your higher consciousness realms of understanding. So that's my prayer, at least, that this is happening to people day by day. And I see it within my work. And I think, you know, the planet has different grids and different parts of it. Whatever reason, soul groups, you know, tend to be a little bit elder. You know, some are a little bit younger, you know, and they populate in different groups. And so I'm finding with different pockets of the world, you know, there might be an older soul phenomenon with some of those different energies, and it's quite refreshing, you know, to be in that field.
Absolutely. Well, what I'm hearing is that you're at the highlight of your life, really, and just beginning in many ways, but it seems like an extremely exhilarating time. Are you going to incorporate more traveling now that we're able to travel again? Or is that going to be part of it? You're going to be on the circuit and connecting in that way with your work?
Yeah, you know, as you know, we're getting to the dog days of this whole thing, and, you know, it's kind of hopefully turning the corner and guidelines, you know, changing. I will be doing, you know, a lot more in person. I have a book signing, actually my first ever book signing is this upcoming Sunday. It's at a venue in Long Island called Tranquility Within. But then I have a couple of other book signings outside of Long Island on the horizon. And I'm going to be also participating in the Forever Family Foundation summer retreat in Connecticut, where I'll be distributing my books and giving a talk there. So for those of you unfamiliar with Forever Family Foundation, they're a wonderful organization that merges science and afterlife communication to help those, you know, dealing with losses of loved ones and deep-seated grief that they're experiencing. So.
Mm. And you've been to the Edgar Cayce Center in Virginia as well.
That was remarkable. I've had family members of mine who just loved Cayce, and I, you know, in my later teens, early 20s, was given a book, There is a River, and that was just a profound book. And right in the ARE, when you walk in, that's right there. I think the author, is the author named Tom or something like that? I forget the name.
Uh-huh.
But it's right when you walk in, it's ARE, it's there. But you know, to me, that just feels like home, and it's right on the water overlooking it. And what I love about, you know, Cayce is everything that he did was intentional, methodical. The position of ARE and where he wanted to live, and moving from, forget where he was, you know, down, somewhere down south, you know, that he moved there, but it just had a specific energy and a specific portal. And obviously being by the water, you know, that was really, really profound for his intuitive senses. But I just, you know, when you're there, it's like a big vortex. It really is a profound energy field there. So that was,
I can only imagine. It's on my list at some point, but we've had, we've hosted many Edgar Cayce events here, and we've had, you know, hundreds of people come. So I'm familiar with that amazing energy that they carry. It's just really powerful. And his autobiography is by far one of my favorites, you know, of books I read. What an incredible, talk about being a trailblazer and being yourself. Well, he took the mold on that one, didn't he?
Right. And what I love about Casey that's helpful for readers is, you know, and people who read his book who study him, is he, you know, once he took off, you know, undoing the tie and was, you know, giving the trans-channeling readings, he was very much a very simple man, you know. He wasn't, you know, all over, you know, kind of out there. He was a very simple Southern man. And I think in a way that really speaks to how powerful the subconscious mind is. And when we tap into that, we're really tapping into our higher selves and, you know, the doorway between two worlds in the world of eternity. Now, each and every one of us has an open door to that, and we could access that in our own developmental levels and readiness. But I love that concept where he was just a simple man. He wasn't like, you know, totally out there, similar you put on a, you know, he was just very, very simple. And then he'd just lie in the bed and go into a trance. Eternity would come through. It's just remarkable.
Yeah, I just love that. Everyone, we're talking today with Jacob L. Cooper, and that's the same as his website, jacoblcooper.com. And we are talking about his new book, Leading It. It's talking about near death, of life after breath. And so we will be right back after this short break. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for joining us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to The Intentional Spirit with Reverend Temple Hayes.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you so much for being with us and being here. Love being part of Unity Online Radio. We definitely are a voice for a changing world. I love, you know, sharing this platform with all the amazing hosts that we have with Unity Online Radio, and a shout out to all the team at Unity Village that, because of that, makes it all possible. You know, we also have ongoing retreats at Unity Village. I mean, everything is becoming in person again, and you can go to unity.org and look at those different things. I wanted to let you know I'm doing a shamanic retreat at Unity Village on August the 25th through the 29th. Love to have you participate with Stowe Good, Karen Taylor Good, and Stowe Daly, and Mark Fuss. And we are going to make some noise and open up and allow some changes to happen in a very good way. But I appreciate all of your support. Thank you for joining me at templehayes.com or firstunity.org. And you can find out also about our online university. That's very exciting. It's like the new talk of things going on. So tune in with us. But today, right now, we are talking to Jacob L. Cooper, and his website is jacoblcooper.com. And Jacob is a trailblazer. And I think in a very short time, Jacob, you have aligned with some, I mean, you didn't waste any time. I mean, you just went to the cream of the crop, really. Suzanne Giesman and Raymond Moody and Anita Morigiani. I mean, just step on in there. I mean, I love it that you didn't mess around. You're like, here I go. If I'm going to fly, I'm going to have the right people in my boat. So I applaud you for that. How long have you been practicing as a licensed therapist and doing the Reiki work? And the other thing I want to talk to you about is I see that you do past life transgressions, and I'd love you to go through that experience and share about that, because I think people find that fascinating. I always say that, I don't know why I say that wrong, it's past life regression. Thank you for sharing. I can just hear that in my head. You're talking to me intuitively. Temple, it's past life regression. So start wherever you want to. I threw a lot at you. I'm not even eating chocolate today. I'm just wound up. So start with any place that you want to with that, and tell us more about you.
Yeah, you know, I regarding past life regressions, people will ask me how old I am, how many years have I practiced, but I firmly believe whatever we're doing now, we've had warm-ups and other practices in other lifetimes. You know, how could you, for instance, ever explain Mozart at such a young age, or Michael Jackson and his talent, in his, you know, innate ability, or, you know, any of these savants that we see just all of a sudden out of the womb seemingly, you know, just have this degree of skill that it's just mathematically impossible to almost have, you know, in one lifetime, bear in mind at such a young age. And so I do believe the work that I am doing is just a continuity, you know, off of other lifetimes and working as healers and stuff like that. But, you know, I was very blessed to be in a family of humanitarians. I come from a lineage of three different social workers. And so the concept was very much embedded in me. It's kind of like a person is a person through a person, that kind of like Ubuntu principle, where, you know, being able to have a sense of community, have a sense of empathy, or as Anita's book would say, empathy is a new strong, and finding ways to be advocates and cheerleaders and supporters for humanity. And that's what I was born into, and the cooperation and support versus competition. And so that really ties into the near-death experience, where, you know, I had this near-death experience, and I talk a little bit more in the book about it, but, you know, when everything was taken from me, I was given infinite love, and I was able to connect to my own spiritual guides and countless angels that were around me. And I just saw the incredible gift of not only life itself, but from losing the body, I was able to remember that this, you know, this was such a gift, and we were this infinite soul in a body. And I guess the point that I'm trying to make is, when I lost my breath and I was given this breath of eternal love and, you know, eternal support and life that was put back into me, my goal was to give that back to people when they were feeling similar, when they were feeling breathless or lifeless, you know, and just do everything I can, you know, to help them catch their breath, because that's really, you know, a part of what, unless you're on a ventilator, that makes us alive and human. And I think the deeper the breath, the deeper the connectivity between the upper ethers and, you know, in this realm, that we're able to really synergize and integrate. But past life regression, like I said before, I was very heavily influenced with Casey, because I think he really, at least from my understanding, was the first intuitive that would really get into in-depth astrological influences and past life influences on, you know, the sitters that he was, you know, reading. In transcribing. And so, you know, for myself, I really understand, you know, past life as a real tool, an insight into soul's purpose. I'm sorry, did I lose you?
It went blank for a minute. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes, I can. I'm sorry. Our connection is strong. Are you able to hear me now?
Oh, yeah, our connection is very strong and will continue to be for many years to come. Yeah, you know how it is with technology. So just start into delving into the depth of the past life regression. That's kind of, after you gave the credit to Casey, then it just kind of faded out. So just pick up from there, because we don't want to miss that. That's some rich stuff, you know?
Yes. You know, I do believe in understanding reincarnation and our past lives gives us a greater, you know, understanding of our roadmap of our soul and what this lifetime is about in so many regards. And I would say being able to write the chapters differently than the ones before, and to utilize the good and understand you know, some of the lessons and some of the, you know, opportunities, you know, within this incarnation to rise above. But as a child and having this near-death experience, I really was fascinated with the subconscious mind and how I was able to retain the near-death experience as well as other subsequent past life memories. And I didn't want that insight to be held by just myself. I wanted to really allow people to have that as well too.
And in your experience, and maybe just one more question about that, because I really want you to talk about also some more things in your book, of course, but do you have a story like where you, you know, without naming people, where you read someone's life and they had like this pivotal change or awakening or it made their life make sense or anything like that?
You know, it's interesting, you know, as a kid, I wouldn't go around calling myself a psychic or have the term for it. I more so saw it as a nuisance where I would be able to have these premonitions on a constant basis and they would just come to pass. And for me, yeah. I saw it more as a burden or just something annoying where I was just like, can I just live my life and not see these things happen? You know, and it's kind of like I look at intuition as almost kind of like we have this, you know, this song playing, but in the background is this kind of soft, you know, other FM, you know, radio playing too, and it's mm-hmm. just, you know, that's going on at the same time. And so as a kid, you know, and most kids I do believe are very highly intuitive because they're not in their sticking thinking as much, they're not in their left brains as much, they're really, you know, most of the times they're a lot more energetically connected, you know, to their own centers of intuition, not in their own head as much. But I would see a lot of events that come to pass, and particularly some of those events would be when someone would pass. I suppose, you know, my sensitivity and understanding from my own near-death experience allowed me to understand, you know, someone's continuation period and when that would happen. But I would, you know, for instance, have kids in my school and they would be talking and then I would just see these future visions and then years later they would happen and I would just almost kick myself for not, you know, telling the person that. And, you know, they were good. They were like weddings, and one kid I saw, you know, passing away or dying at a young age, and that not only happened, but I drove my car and the next morning on a random road to my school, his car went through, you know, a part of the woods, and it was like early in the wee hours of the morning. And so it was just strange how a decade earlier, you know, you had this premonition, just a random, not really random, but just, you know, 10 years later, you have this profound connection and the dots are somehow connected because there is no real time, you know, over there, there's just time here, you know. But,
it is somewhat true that, you know, the more we own it, the more we seem to have it. And I think that that's something, you know, for those tuning in and listening, that's an important value to remember. You know, being a psychic or being very intuitive is like developing that muscle, you know, and you develop confidence with it and competence over time. And you have to be willing sometimes to speak things, you know, and I think that's an important part of it too. You have to be willing to ask questions or articulate to someone to get some kind of validation so they can go, oh yeah, thank you for saying that. You know, that reminds me of, you know, this that occurred. So, you know, good for you. You're stepping out there, Jacob L. Cooper. That's for sure. Let's talk about your book. Are you, did it change you in any way writing it?
Yeah, you know, I was about to say, we just don't know the value of a smile to someone. Never mind if we have an intuitive hint how that could change someone's lifetime and not being able to be afraid in the right way, you know, to share that. You just never know what that will do with someone's day. But regarding the book, you know, years ago after my first presentation, with an organization that I'm now an ambassador of. It's called the Eyes of Learning Metaphysical Center. You know, someone came up to me and is just like, where is your book? And I'm just like, book? I was, you know, at the time, you know, taking remedial writing courses in a college and reading courses. And I'm like, me writing a book, an author? Like, no, that, you know, that was probably deserved to like a sibling of mine who was, you know, academic. And I just never saw myself as a writer. But I, you know, understood the value of story. You know, see, I think there is a lot of people who walk around like old library shelves where you have these experiences and they collect dust. And if the book isn't opened up, it just kind of sits there. And I think our experiences are the same way. You know, if we're able to, whether that be a blog, you know, a live or just a small sharing in a, you know, in a professional, you know, supportive setting, you just never know where that experience will take you. And that's one thing I've learned, you know, that it's not about necessarily what you think, but, you know, you just never know the impact that it'll have on someone else, because we could always be our own worst critics. But I just found so much catharsis in writing the book. And to me, you know, the world at the time was kind of shut down, and, you know, it was, you know, it was a weird time. And so I said, how could I use this period of stagnation to find acceleration? And I used the pain to deliver, you know, an expedited purpose to get this book out. And it gave me a new life when it felt like there was, again, the deprivation of oxygen of the world outside of me and just the stagnation on the outside, and finding a momentum within, you know, to generate this book.
Well, I applaud you, you know, because I know, being an author, I know what it takes, you know, to to get it that right. It's actually ready for people to, you know, delve into and to read. What kind of feedback are you getting from people that are reading the book at this point?
Yeah, you know, I was talking with our friend Suzanne Giesman. She had such a good point. She said, you know what, people will come to your book with their own level of consciousness. And it's true. You know, if you have the same book, it hasn't changed. And so, you know, for the most part, no matter what creative work you do, there'll be, you know, people who like it, but there'll always be detractors. And I certainly am no stranger to that. You know, that's part of the territory. But on the overarching average, it's been positive and it's been moving, you know, regarding, you know, the level of support. You know, of course, on Amazon, there's always going to be those, you know, on ratings, 1 or 2 stars. But that, when you have any creative work, that's a part of it. But I don't focus, as Anita would say, on dancing in front of the naysayers or entertaining that, because then you tend to attract that more, but rather focusing on the people that it's going to reach, that it's going to help, and, you know, kind of living your message unencumbered to those people. And then that leads to more abundance. So that's really what I focused on, and just understanding that people come to it at different levels of consciousness. But it, like I said before, you know, mothers who had children who have committed suicide have contacted me, or people in hospital beds, and people just feeling just very deprived of life force. And, you know, that really, the book, my goal is for everyone to find something within it. I don't try to label it or pigeonhole it as just a book on a near-death experience. If I did that, I wouldn't be happy about the creation, because I think it's much more than just that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you really, I mean, that's a level of making peace that one must make in public life, is that, you know, there's always going to be the critics. I get it a lot on social media, or someone wants to debate something about their belief that, you know, they're not really open to anything else. And, you know, to me, it's really good. And it makes me smile, because it reminds me that I'm being my own person, living my own truth, living out loud. And I always say to people that I'm supporting to train, you know, to be out in the field or to be authors or to be speakers or people blogging or whatever, if everybody likes you, you're just in mediocrity. You know, if everybody goes, yeah, I agree with everything you're saying, you're not really pushing the envelope, you know, or living out loud. So for me, I've changed it around in my mind. Instead of seeing it as people criticizing me, it's like I take it as a compliment. Like, yeah, I got to keep going. Right. Stirring the pot out there. Oh, yeah, I got to keep people on their toes, you know.
The controversy is great, and that also means that you're being innovative. I mean, do you remember when the Beatles came to America and they were on the Ed Sullivan Show? And, you know, my grandmother was telling me how at the time, you know, the younger kids loved them, but the older generation just had their arms crossed and their head shaped because
it was just
a phenomenon that was so foreign, and they just didn't know what to make of it. And so when people do that, they just kind of other it. But at a certain point, you know, people seem to understand it, catch on, and you're having a wave of consciousness and something different rather than being a leaf in water that people understand. And so I think that's a great point in breaking ground. And, you know, it's complimentary, you know, when people get agitated because you cause them to think. And some people are just lazy and would rather put something down than to have time and understand, right?
The same people that, you know, criticize you jump over to my page and criticize me and jump onto Suzanne's page and criticize her. And, we have a lot in common. Isn't that wonderful? Whoop-de-doo, you know, because there's, you know, I used to do that early on as a speaker when I would travel the country or in the UK. I'd, you know, speak to hundreds of people and I'd get two people that wrote a bad report. And I, you know, I was a kid then, still growing up, and I'd focus on the two people, you know, instead of the 298. It's like, this is ridiculous, you know. But it just keeps us on our toes. That's all. It's just, it's wonderful, and it says that you're doing a lot of things well, and that's what matters. If you were to take in one piece of the book, and talking about your afterlife experience and how it is really shifted and gave you insight with immortality and all that, what would you say would be one of your favorite points? I know there's many, and hopefully on every page there's one, but I mean, it is our stuff. They're our children. But what would you say has really moved you in either what you already knew and you're sharing it, or what you discovered along the way in writing it?
Yeah, I think it's the value of embracing. You know, I think within our society, we're taught love on a very low frequency where it becomes conditional love, where we are taught to love what we do and not have a greater extent to love who we are, or to not be able to love ourselves despite X, X, and X. And so, you know, what I would say is, you know, having life as a teacher as an opportunity to bring you back to love. And it's not just the good things that happens to us that we label as good, you know, but the difficult parts and how, you know, that changes us. And so certainly, you know, the most traumatic experience, just, you know, people speak about all the good stuff about the near-death experience. But, you know, to me, it was quite traumatic, suffocating. You know, on the other side of that, I knew all was well. But having this profound experience and having to come back and not having the language for it was a challenge. But to be able to look at darkness and see the eternal light past it and see the illusion and the temporary weight that only it had of what we present to it as, and understanding, you know, that light and love are eternal, is a great pillar of resilience for people to be able to overcome challenges and remember the simple message that they are eternal, they are forever loved, infinitely and far greater than they could ever comprehend within this human mind. And I think just the value of understanding that we are not alone, we are supported, this is not random, this is intelligent, this is charted, this is planned, and being able to entrust the strength inside of you and around you as far greater than the challenges that meet. Otherwise, you wouldn't be put on this earth if you couldn't handle what comes your way. That's what
that's
I.
That's powerful.
What I'm trying to learn.
That's very powerful. I love your conversation. I think it's brave and bold, and you know, so necessary, and so engaging, in so many ways. It's going to be fun to watch you on the circuit with, you know, so many other people that are teaching this, and it, you know, it's the 4-minute mile. Nobody could do it. It's now the conversation that you don't really die. You know, it's shaking up. You know, it's just, it's we're just always awakening and evolving, like your grandmother said, and it's necessary. It's really necessary.
Oh, sure. So, the moment we see ourselves as a spiritual being, we're able to understand the synonymous understanding of physical evolution, you know, as something eternally that's happening and evolving within each and every lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I love your feeling around that is, you know, is that everything is spiritual, and there's a big distinction, I think, between everything is spiritual and I am making a responsible choice as a verb to be spiritual, you know, in that way, and the practice of that, and what that looks like, and what that holds me accountable for, and too, is very cool. I mean, I know for me in my, you know, my early 30s, it was how many more courses could I take, and how much more meditation could I do, so that I could not be a human anymore and just be floating around or whatever, you know. But then it became, you know, being spiritual in the practice of that, you become more aware of your own humanity and the humanity of everyone else and the richness of that. You become more sensitive, not less, and more open, and your heart opens. And anyway, it's an amazing journey, that's for sure, you know. And I'm glad you're on it and glad you're doing your part. Everyone, I'm talking with Jacob L. Cooper, and he is trailblazing the world with his new book, Life After Breath, How a Brush with Fatality Gave Me a Glimpse of Immortality. And if you are, you know, this long-term friend of Unity Online or a new friend of Unity Online, you know, also Suzanne Giesman has her own show as a host. And so lots of good information out there and lots of opportunities for you to grow and expand. I want to thank you for tuning in with me on templehaze.com or firstunity.org. And you can access our online university where we teach all kinds of things from mysticism to how to give a talk to being a healthy parent. We have all kinds of things. Jacob, it has been a pleasure to spend this hour with you. I hold the best for you. I wish you well on your journey, and I hope you continue to push buttons out there because it means you're doing a really good job. Thank you for coming on board today with us on Unity Online. Appreciate that.
My honor. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'm Victoria Moran. Since we launched the Main Street Vegan podcast back in 2012, lots more people have discovered the way that moving in a vegan direction can infuse our lives with vitality, spirituality, and compassion. My guests are experts on every aspect of making this work in your real life and our real world. Join us for Main Street Vegan here on mindbodyspirit.fm.